put away any and every sign of folly in our lives, in our thinking, in our actions, in our words, if we are to redeem the time, as we just read in Ephesians, and faithfully follow Jesus. We want to know what the will of the Lord is. We want to know how we should live. And so it requires us to put away foolishness. And that means that we have to be looking for signs of foolishness, recognizing it, looking at the root cause of why we tend toward foolishness, and dealing with it if we really want to redeem the time and faithfully follow Jesus. So I'm going to keep turning this off so you're not distracted by the screen, okay? Just look right here. So Proverbs, you know, when I first got assigned this topic, I'm like, okay, great. I did what you'd probably do. I just started copying every verse I could find in the book of Proverbs about folly, foolish, the simple. And there are a lot of verses. I mean, I found like 87 verses, and I'm not sure I found them all. The book of Proverbs, from one end to the other, is talking about the fool and the wise. And this is what the foolish do. This is how the foolish act. This is the results that the foolish find. This is what happens for the father of the foolish, and on and on and on. And one of the things I learned is that in the Hebrew, there's actually like five different words or terms that kind of surround this idea of foolishness. One is just, you'll find in most of your Bibles, a reference to the simple. And the simple is one category of foolishness. It's really kind of the naive and the gullible. Maybe it's just people that haven't had that much education in their life. We still chuckle when we were first in Zambia. We had this brother in the Lord. He became a dear friend, and we're still in touch with him. But he was a young guy, hadn't had much education in his life, and he asked my son one evening, he said, Stevu, is it really true that a man has touched the moon? I mean, he was asking, have really people gone to the moon? And he was like, not sure whether to believe that or not. And he's a wise man in many respects, but there was this part of him that was just, it was just kind of an innocent simpleness to his question. And so we had just so many stories and questions of people that they just don't have the education we have. And so sometimes they would make decisions that were not wise because of that. The more common word, though, and there's actually three different words that are all translated in our English Bible, fool. So you have the simple, and then you have the fool. Speaks of someone who is more dull to instruction. And in some cases, they're just lazy. They just don't even want to work. I know what I think. This is my opinion. And I really don't want to invest a lot of effort to try to understand anything further. I'm good. And those people are called fools. And there's a time where, you know, naivete can move into a more serious kind of foolishness. And it can move pretty quickly from superstition to spiritual significance in some cultures. There's a lot of belief in witchcraft in Zambia, and there is witchcraft, and there is a lot of satanic activity, but that activity gets enlarged and it gets melded with tradition and superstition. And so, for instance, one of the things that most Zambians, even people that are in evangelical churches will tell you, you know, witches fly naked. Did you know that? No. Yeah, I mean, witches can fly. You knew that. I mean, it's not just Halloween stuff. I mean, they really believe that witches fly. And they fly naked. And sometimes they crash land. In fact, if your church has a prayer service, you can cause witches to crash. And you'll know that they did because you'll find them stealing clothes off your line in the backyard. And that's because that's a witch, number one. And number two, your prayers shot them down. Did you know that? I mean, this is not just crazy story that kids play. I read that story in the National Police Gazette, which is kind of the police newspaper. Head of the police department. What do you think of that, Dan? Crazy. I mean, it's just foolishness. And yet, people believe it. I mean, they believe that witches meet every year for 4 days under Lake Malawi. There for 4 days. I mean, they just, you know, the ideas that people begin to believe, and then Satan just takes that foolishness and uses it for his purposes. And then finally, there's the word for scoffer or scorner. And so that's the strongest of the three. That's someone who has taken their foolishness and now hurts others with it. If you have your Bible at Proverbs 1:22, you actually see all three of these. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing, and fools hate knowledge? So you see all three of them there. The simple, the fool, and the scoffer. So where do we start with this topic? And we get rolling. Well, I figured a good place is a familiar proverb, Proverbs 22:15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. And I think it's a good place to start because it reminds us of a couple of things. One, you know, every child has a good degree of foolishness in them, right? You know that. You've seen that in your life? I mean, it's just, we all begin with it. Some of us move further away from it than others. There's some pretty adult foolish still have a lot of that childhood foolishness. But it's innate in all of us. And so it's bound up in the heart. Number two, interesting about this verse, is that foolishness is a heart issue. At the end of the day, it's not about our intellectual understanding. It's not about our education. Wisdom is the ability to take that knowledge and then apply it in a godly, wise way. And foolishness is the opposite. And the reason we struggle with foolish thinking and foolish actions and foolish words is because of a heart issue. And I love the sermon Nick preached 3 or 4 weeks ago on the heart. And in fact, I just listened to it again, brother, just to kind of write down, how is it that we lead our heart instead of following our heart? And that just resonated so much with me, and I felt like I need to hear it again. I need to lead my heart. I need to lead it toward wisdom. I can't just respond to my feelings. I can't just base my life on how I feel today. So I started making a list of, okay, so how are kids foolish? So I have my list of 87 verses, and I'm kind of looking there, and then I'm thinking about mostly my grandkids, because they're young. And how foolishness is found in the heart of a child. And first thing I wrote was they're wise in their own eyes and unteachable. Have you ever tried to help like a 3-year-old do something and they're like, no, I want to do it. And no, let me help you. We really need to leave like in 5 minutes. No, I want to do it. I want to tie my shoes. I want to put on my clothes. No, I can button it. I want to do this. And boy, it's like pulling teeth to try to get past that, isn't it? And it's just, you know, it's kind of epitomized right there. But does it continue into to our lives? Well, we'll talk about it a little bit more. Number two, the fool fails to care about others. And you see that in a child. I mean, their world is that's their focus. They are just like, this is what I need and what I want, and this is what I want right now. And some people grow in out of that, and some people don't. And some of us can be pretty foolish in that respect. Number three, disrespect for authority, mom and dad, and stubborn about it. You ever seen a stubborn child? So we have, you know, we've got gift and grace, but we have three grown sons. And so our three boys, kids can be so different, right? I mean, John, our oldest, you know, he would, you know, mouth off or want to disobey and give him a light tap on the rear and, you know, kind of get his attention. Our second son, Mark, you didn't even need to touch him. All you had to do was just sort of look, and, I mean, it was motivating for him. He didn't need the SWAT. He needed just the disapproval, and he was ready to go. Stephen, our third born, this kid would just throw himself on the ground, and no matter what you did, you could try a SWAT, you could try grounding, you could try appealing, pick him up, talk to him, and he would just throw himself on the ground again. He's grown into a very mature, committed believer and wonderful father. But there were days I wondered, what in the world is going to become of this kid? Stubborn. Number three, or four, quick-tempered and impulsive. So, you know, kids can get angry pretty fast. You ever notice that? I mean, it's a characteristic of the fool, is that they are quick-tempered. My daughter-in-law was telling on one of my sweet granddaughters, who is precious, but she's fiery. And she likes to do art projects with mommy, which means she starts the art project and then she wants mommy to finish it the way she directs mommy to finish it. And the other day, my daughter-in-law is like swamped, busy, in the middle of something else. And my granddaughter was like, "Now, Mom, I need you to do this right now." And Lindsay said, "I can't do it right now, sweetie. I'll come as soon as I can." She just exploded and destroyed her own artwork. And, you know, that was like a meltdown. Right? That's what kids do. They just quick, cut off their own nose to spite their face. And I'm never quick-tempered. The book of Proverbs talks about the babbling fool. Boy, does that start in childhood. I mean, kids can talk about nonsense forever. And so we see that. And then finally, Proverbs tells us that a fool is full of gossip and slander and lies. And we all know kids are quick to say, "Sissy did it," or shade the truth a little bit, or criticize the other person in the deal. So, a lot of things to work with. And what I thought was interesting, I read a great quote by a commentator who said, "The book of Proverbs opens by breaking up the plain daylight of wisdom into its rainbow of constituent colors. These all shade into one another, and any one of them can be used to represent the whole, yet there is some value in seeing them momentarily analyzed and grouped." See? So, you know, white light is really made of all these different wavelengths of light, and a prism will break it into the various constituents. The same way we can talk about wisdom or foolishness, and we can make these statements about the wise and the foolish in kind of an overarching composite sense. But the book of Proverbs is really interesting because it allows us to sort of break apart that overarching concept and begin to look at individual characteristics of wisdom, individual characteristics of the fool. And to me, that's where the value begins to come. Because if you just ask me, "Glenn, are you a fool?" I'm going to say, "Pity the fool that thinks I'm a fool." But If you said, have you ever had a foolish action, like every day, have you ever had a foolish thought, have you ever spoken a foolish word, so I can begin to kind of group and look and understand and realize, yeah, I got some foolishness in me. And when we come to this, you know, it's not like a digital thing. Don't just think you're either wise or you're a fool. The Word of God is more piercing than that. If there's 20% foolishness in me, is that an issue? Yeah, I need to not think about the 80% of the time I'm wise. I need to look at the 20% of the time I'm foolish. So I'm kind of thinking, okay, thinking, action, and words. Okay, I'm on this half, right? I mean, I think I mostly think wisely. Where would you put yourself? Further? How about actions? This is analog now. We're not digital, right? So this is a continuum across this rainbow. So are you more over here? Or are you going to slide more over here? How about on actions? Where do you think you'd put yourself? Pretty good. I put myself pretty good. I mean, I might think wrong, but usually I catch myself before I really do something totally stupid. What about words? Yeah, not so good. My words slip up. So, you know, we kind of begin to think, okay, well, so this is the area I need to think about. I am foolish to some degree. I want to move toward real wisdom. And as if that's not compelling enough, what is our standard for wisdom? Christ. Colossians 2:3 says, Paul wanted the hearts of the believers to be encouraged, being knit together in love, to reach all the riches of full assurance of understanding and the knowledge of God's mystery, which is Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. In Christ are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And so our standard for being wise is none other than Christ himself. So then I look and I say, well, compared to Christ, how are my actions? Compared to Christ, how is my thinking? Compared to Christ, how are my words? And all of a sudden, I'm sliding more this way. Because I know I've got a lot to grow and a lot to learn. And so I'm motivated. I'm motivated first to look at Christ, to appreciate his wisdom, to think about him. John Piper wrote an article. He said, Christ knows all people. He said, one reason to admire and trust Jesus above all other persons is that he knows more than anyone else. He knows all people thoroughly, their hearts and their thoughts. John 2:24, he knew all men. Acts 1:24, you, Lord, know the hearts of all men. Have you ever been in a situation where you have to make a decision that involves other people, but you don't know where their head is or their heart is? Christ would look at someone and know exactly what they were thinking, exactly where their heart was leaning. Not only did he know people perfectly, he also knows what people will think and do tomorrow. Yes. Jesus knew all the things that were coming upon him. Remember the scene where Jesus turns to Peter and says, Peter, do you love me? John 21:17. You got it right. Lord, you know things. You know that I love you. Peter wasn't saying, you know my heart, therefore you know all things. He was saying, you know all things, therefore you know my heart. You know all things. So Christ is a perfect standard of wisdom. Why would we not turn to him? Why would we not long to be like him? Why would we not pursue him? He knows every mystery of the universe. He knows every hair. He knows every hair on my head. He knows exactly what's going to happen in the world. He knows exactly how many days my life will extend. He knows my financial future. He knows my financial present better than I probably know my own financial present. He's the source of all wisdom. And so we begin to think about the fool, and we keep in balance our pursuit of Christ and who He is. And we begin to tear down and look at these characteristics of a fool. So we've already said a fool is wise in his own eyes, proud, unteachable, doesn't learn from his mistakes. 18:2 says a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. And 26:11, this wonderful graphic verse, like a dog that returns to his vomit, he's a fool that repeats his folly. So a fool is just stubborn. They don't want to learn. And they make the same mistake again and again. Detour, my daughter Grace, I'm going to talk about 16-year-olds for a second. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about your friends at school. Okay? We good? So, you know, Mark Twain was funny. He said, when I was 18, I believed my parents knew nothing. When I was 20, I couldn't believe how much they had learned in 2 years. But his best quote was, he said, that a child, when they turn 12, should be put into a barrel and fed through the hole in the side of the barrel until they're 16. At which time you should plug the hole. I mean, that's just recognizing this child who knows it all. They've got the world figured out. They can't be told anything. And, you know, to some degree, we laugh and we're maybe frustrated at times. But, you know, when I think about my own life and my prayer life and Christ as the source of all wisdom, and how often I just say, I got this, God. I mean, I am capable of going through a day full of decisions about work and money and people and relationships without ever turning to the Lord. What do you call that? Foolishness. That's foolishness. How do I do that? How do you do that? I know you do it too. We can go through all day making all kinds of decisions without stopping to say, God, would you give me wisdom in this decision? God, you know this person's heart. Would you just give me the right words to say in this situation? We make decisions. I make decisions at work involving so much complexity and money. And how I'm like a fool that's wise in my own eyes. Obviously I'm wise in my own eyes. Because if I was dependent, I would be asking. And maybe you're the same. And so, are we foolish? Foolish in our thinking? Guilty. I'm foolish. And so we turn to Christ. You know, it's really pride, isn't it? That makes us think we can do it by ourselves. And then we look to Christ, who humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. All right, how about this one? A fool is unloving, failing to care about others. 26:10, like an archer who wounds everyone, is the one who hires a passing fool or a drunkard. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. You know, we have issues with sarcasm in our culture. It's foolishness to engage. You know, it seems funny. And I think it's more of a guy thing, actually. Somehow we think that, you know, we're clever if we can barb the other guy, but kind of do it in a little bit of a fun, sarcastic, oh, I was just joking. Right? Know anybody like that? Man, it's hurtful. It can be very hurtful. As believers, we need to not go there. It's foolish talking. I mean, you know, the problem with the selfishness and foolishness is when we're selfish, we're only thinking about our own gain instead of others. And it leads us to behaviors and thinking that ultimately even hurts ourselves. And so it is really foolishness to be so preoccupied with ourselves and what's best for me and not think about others. There's a guy that I work with. He is our number one estimator, land and work. I mean, this guy, Bill, you want him in your company. The guy is awesome. He's landed literally millions of dollars of work for our business. And his worldview is, I need to be as successful as I possibly can because I'm going to retire when I'm 50 and I'm going to be rich when I do it. And I'm providing for my family and I'm doing this. And so his world is all about himself. How do you think that's working out for him in terms of how he's perceived? People don't trust him. People don't really respect him as a person. They like what he brings in. They tolerate some of that. But in terms of relationships, it's counterproductive. He's, in trying to build himself up, he actually hurts himself. And that's what a fool does. When we become so self-interested and self-focused, in the end, it hurts us. And it misaligns our heart with God's heart when we become preoccupied with ourselves. So we're going to have missions night. You know, the situation in Ethiopia has turned bad again in the last 2 weeks. The prime minister has resigned. They're expecting a state of emergency to be announced for another 6 months. And there was an email, some of you probably got it from Kid Brew this morning, saying it's beginning to impact ministry. There's hope because two of the potential leaders are believers. We need to pray. We need to pray, friends. We need to pray for Ethiopia. We need to pray believers will not get hurt. We need to take our eyes up. So now I've got to get my missions piece in here. Yesterday, I'm looking out the backyard and I'm telling Lisa, you know, the wisteria is growing up too much into the olives. We really need to go cut down that wisteria. Meanwhile, 500 people died in Syria. I'm worrying about wisteria. That's foolishness. God's heart is for the broken and the hurting. And it's not just in Syria. It's in Vacaville. It might be in this room. There could be people that are really hurting here. And I can get so fired up and focused on trimming my wisteria that my heart grows cold to people that are hurting around this planet. And that is foolishness because I am ignoring God's heart. I'm not being like Christ. I'm just living like a 3-year-old who only wants to play with their cars. It's about that foolish and naive. Okay. A fool is quick-tempered and fails to consider or care about the long-term consequences of their words or action. One who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is reckless and careless. A man of quick temper acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. I like this one. The vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult. So there's kind of two things here I'm lumping together. One is impulsive, quick to action, quick decision, quick to make judgments, quick to get angry. The other is quick to get angry, quick to get irritated, quick to make judgments. Are you quick or are you reasonable? I mean, I'm quick. You know, Lisa says, I think my computer's dying. I'm like, okay, we need to get a new computer. I swing by Costco. Ooh, there's some good sales. Like, okay. Catch myself at the last second. Glenn, don't be impulsive. How many times have I made a foolish decision because I'm just impulsive and I go spend money that I don't have or that isn't really needed? And I'm like the dog that returns to his, yeah, why are you doing that? That's what I am. Glenn, why are you doing that? Haven't you learned that lesson 20 times? We're impulsive. We're foolish. How many people in, I won't say in this room, how many people in Vacaville struggle with money because of foolish decisions day in and day out? How many people are struggling with tremendous debt? It's foolishness. And how many people are just angry? You know, we live in an angry age. Have you noticed that? And you know what? Really, it concerns me that in the last 10 years, we are now finding ourselves constantly encouraged to be angry. I mean, it doesn't matter what your political point of view is or, you know, what your thinking is, you should be angry about the situation. We are coached on how to be angry. We're encouraged to be angry. We're stirred up to be angry. And when we get angry, we affirm it and go, yeah, he should be angry. And we totally justify it. And the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Brothers and sisters, we need to be careful. We need to think about what's getting pumped into our brains and hearts and what we're hearing from our friends and colleagues and who we associate with. Because if we hang out in the company of fools that are quick-tempered and angry, guess what? It will seep into you. It will. And it won't be Christ-likeness. It won't. Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will. When reviled, he did not revile in return. He didn't give in to foolishness of a quick temper and an explosive response. The fool loves to talk about trivial things, loves to hear his own voice, speaks when he should listen. The tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. Whoever winks the eye causes trouble, and a babbling fool will come to ruin. So there are some people that just love to hear themselves talk. I was in a meeting one time with this guy, and it's like, just stop. You just need to stop. He couldn't stop. He just kept talking and talking. I understand. Some people, they process out loud. I get that. But at some point, you know, your processing isn't leading to any conclusions. You just need to learn to just stop. We need to not be people that are all about talking. We need to learn to listen. We should be what? Slow to speak. Quick to hear. Quick to listen. James 1:19, know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. Bonhoeffer, I love this quote from Bonhoeffer, half-eared listening. Do you get that? Half-eared? That's where you're kind of listening, but you're kind of not listening. You're kind of just trying to listen enough to make them think you're listening, kind of nod. Meanwhile, what are you doing? You think about what you're going to say as soon as they stop talking, right? I mean, you're already planning your next statement. I do that at work. It's bad. It's a bad habit. I need to stop it. It's foolish. Half-eared listening, Bonhoeffer says, despises the brother and is only waiting for a chance to speak and thus get rid of the other person. It's unloving, and it's not right. And you know, the other way I applied this to me is back to prayer. So one of my problems is I don't pray enough. The other thing is, sometimes I pray, I'm busy telling God what He needs to do or what I'd like for Him to do, and I don't stop to listen. You know, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Do you see prayer as mainly a monologue or a dialogue? I mean, for some people, prayer is just a monologue. I mean, we're not going to literally hear God answer, and so it's just a one-way conversation. And I'm telling God, here's what I need, here's what I want. Be glorified. I might say, you know, I throw some praise in there. But I need to stop sometimes and listen for that still small voice of the Holy Spirit prompting me, praying for wisdom, and then waiting to listen instead of just babbling, pouring out my own wisdom. You didn't know how foolish I was, did you? I'm foolish. The slides are on, huh? Can I skip one? Well, here's our last. A fool loves gossip, lies when it suits him, slanders others to advance himself. The one who conceals hatred has lying lips, and whoever utters slander is a fool. You know, I'm a critical person. I don't always speak it, but I can think it. I judge all kinds of things. We were up at a retreat with a bunch of believers, wonderful believers, and we had a... And for their communion time, they used a little loaf of bread instead of unleavened crackers. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, are these guys Christians? Don't they know, like, leaven is a... You know, a sign of sin, and Christ was without sin, and so there's a reason we use unleavened crackers. It has significance. It's part of the picture of the holiness of Christ. And you're giving me leavened bread for the breaking of bread. I mean, my mind is just going. This is the communion time. And my heart is criticizing instead of being humble before God. That's foolishness. But we live in a time of not just anger, not just opinion, but a time of criticism. We criticize everything and everyone. You can go into the bookstore and you can read 100 books on leadership, and you won't find many on followership. We're too busy criticizing our leaders to really follow, setting ourselves as their peers and equals, challenging and assessing and questioning everything they do. Because we have a critical spirit. And it's not good. Well, let me finish up here. So I look at this and I think, wise in my own eyes. Yeah, I don't pray enough. I love to talk about trivial things. Yeah, I don't listen when I do pray. I'm foolish. I'm foolish in my thinking if I think I can manage life by myself. Disrespect authority. I resist leadership. I challenge it. Impulsive. I'm quick to make judgments. Quick. Sometimes you push my button, I'm quick to be angry. Foolish actions. And I don't think I'm a big gossip, but do I have a heart that's ready to criticize and pass judgment when I don't like what I see? And am I unloving? Am I more worried about my wisteria than what God is doing around the world? It's foolishness. I'm full of it. And I need Christ, because Christ is the only answer. Let me just close back in Proverbs chapter 1. Take a look at these verses. Proverbs chapter 1. I'm going to start with verse 29. Here's the question I ask myself at the end of a discussion of foolishness and folly. Christ is the goal, right? Everybody with me? Agree? Christ is the standard. I need to be like Christ. I need to pursue Christ. I need to imitate Christ. I need to look to Christ. Moving from where I am to Christ's likeness is what? Sanctification. How serious am I today, this morning? How serious are you about your sanctification this coming week? Or are you kind of okay with where you are spiritually? Oh yeah, I know, I'm kind of foolish. Or are you okay with that? Because complacency in our sanctification is yet one more sign of foolishness. 129, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, would have none of my counsel and despised all my reproof. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. Brothers and sisters, let's not be complacent about pursuing Christ this week. Let's not be complacent about dealing with foolishness. Let's not be complacent about a weak prayer life. Let's not be complacent about a heart that closes off our heart to people that are suffering around the world and in our community and in our jobs and in our work. Let's not be complacent about tendencies to make quick judgments and quick decisions and react quickly in anger. Let's come with hearts of humility and pursue Christ and find wisdom and life and peace and joy. I turn to the communion time.